Blog Talk Radio.
And we have several callers on the line already. We have Ben, Albert, and John. I am going to make it brief because I'm pretty sure John's at work. Ben wanted to talk about Venezuela tonight, and Don wanted to talk about Roger Stone, and we should all talk about the government shutdown. We're doing two shows tonight from 11 to quarter to 12 Central Time, and then 15 minutes later, a second show. Now, I am going to give a brief 90-second introduction. Before we get into Venezuela, Hugo Rafael Chavez was a very famous leader of Venezuela from 1999 to 2013, and he made several social reforms. He was born into a working-class family and built his way up the ranks of the military, and then he founded the clandestine revolutionary Bolivian Movement 200 called MBR 200 in the early 80s. He led that movement into an unsuccessful coup d'etat against Democratic Action Government of President Carlos Andres Perez in 1992, for which he was imprisoned. Later, he was pardoned after 2 years, and he founded a new political party known as the Fifth Republic Movement and was elected president of Venezuela in 1998. He was reelected several times with over 60% of the votes. The main thing I just briefly want to say about him is in the early 2000s, he garnered and developed the oil industry, and also they had record volume oil revenues, which made them very rich. His government nationalized key industries. He created a participatory democratic communal council and implemented social programs. Now, this is very important because Caracas used to be the poorest city in the world with terrible drinking water and disease, and he fixed a lot of that. So in spite of his left-wing issues, he did improve the government. Now, just on a sour note, in June of 2010, he declared an economic war due to shortages in Venezuela, and it was the beginning of the crisis of the Bolivian Venezuela. By the end of Chavez's presidency, economic actions during his government resulted in deficit spending and price controls. It proved to be unsustainable, and poverty reemerged. He also saw more corruption and murder and things like that, but for a while they had it sweet. With that, I'll bring in the callers now. We got Don, Ben, Albert, Wade, and John. And Albert was the first call in, so I'll say hi. Good evening, Albert. Albert may not be at the phone at the moment. Good evening, Ben.
Hello. Oh, I'm right here. I'm here. Hello. Can you hear me?
Okay, good, Albert.
Hey, Albert.
Nice to hear your voice. Hi, Ben. Nice to talk to you again tonight. Now we have John. Good evening.
Hello,
John.
Special J.
Hi. By the way, there's no political vitriol tonight, just rational discussion. Okay. Wade, good evening. And Don, good evening. And Don, hello.
Hi, I'm always last, damn it. What's wrong with everybody? Hi, everybody.
So Wade and Don, we're doing a second show at midnight, which is Wade and my time, and it's 10 o'clock your time. So if anyone gets feisty or long-worded, then you can continue your, whatever, later on. So we're starting out with Ben's information on the new Venezuelan upheaval, and then we're shifting to what Don wanted to say about Roger Stone. And then anybody else can chime in as needed. Ben, why don't you start it out tonight?
Okay. Yeah, it's getting pretty crazy in Venezuela. They're basically, the whole country is split between the existing president and the up-and-coming self-declared president that Donald Trump and a lot of other places support. And he seems to have the same charisma that Obama had. He even looks similar to Obama. I think he's like 35 years old. But half the people support him. And a lot of people are angry with the situation that the money is basically blowing around in the street and it's completely worthless. And a lot of that was caused by socialism that Maduro implemented, but the U.S. actually has some to do with the devaluation and the inflation because of the sanctions that go back to the Bush era. So,
yeah,
have you guys been
that's
watching
what I mentioned stuff? In the article, that even though they were really wealthy in revenue, they had some kind of embargo of some sort. But they did restructure and rebuild a lot of government, like schools and housing and water supply improvements. So does anybody know anything about this besides Ben? I know a lot about the history of Venezuela, but not about the current stuff.
I'd like to know more.
So do you think America's going to propel the Trump backer into office, or do you think that the revolution is going to continue down there, Ben?
It's tough to say because China has a lot invested into Maduro, and Putin likes Maduro also. So I don't know what kind of deals that they've made, but Russia has basically pledged support if they're invaded by anybody. I think
well,
Russia's
part of the
already
problem
put bombers
in those South American countries over the years in Argentina and Chile, there's been a lot of military juntas, and there's always a triangulation between South America, Cuba, and Russia. Anytime a really strong-based left-wing government gets in, they rise up again with anti-Americanism, not only anti-Americanism, but Marxist policies. And Isabel Allende wrote about Salvador Allende in Chile in the 1973 coup d'etat, in which he took over a socialist government and then was overthrown by Kissinger and Nixon. So there, those types of countries, especially Venezuela, where Hugo Chavez was very vocal against the American government. At that time, I believe in the early 2000s, it was Bush. So they're never well-behaved countries, and they say what they want and they do what they want.
Well, the cartel is in control, basically, but there's also giants playing tug-of-war with little tiny Venezuela. So on the local level, the politicians basically, they fear and have to make deals with the cartels. And on the global level, they have to make deals and shake hands with giant countries. So it's a tough situation, and the people are basically divided in half. The new
Last week you said it was a threat against Mexico. Potentially against the U.S. and Mexico. Do you find that to be true still?
Yeah, that's the whole point. Is if this goes sideways, there's not going to be caravans of hundreds. There's going to be people pushed out of South America north, so it could be millions. And that's what I've been saying about the wall. Mexico's wall is a joke. They can't keep anybody out of their southern border, even though it's way shorter than ours. But people just stampede right through the southern border of Mexico, and then it becomes our problem.
Well, I do have something to mention about that. I was at church today, and they were talking about how 21 Iranians got converted to Christianity in a couple of countries where these missionaries were acting. One was Denmark and Holland, and one was in Moldova. So let's just take Europe for an example. They've had a big surge of people south of the Mediterranean coming into their countries from all over the world, Mali, Chile, Turkey, Syria, to name a few, and Chad. A lot of them linger on the shores for months before they can even get their big toe in the country. And then once they get in there, some people acclimate and also adapt to the culture. Now, I'm not really scared that there's going to be thousands and millions coming in, because Venezuela Argentina, Uruguay, and all those countries have had upheaval for years, and it hasn't happened. So maybe one of the other co-hosts can argue about that point. Like, do you guys think that it's an immediate threat?
No. One of the things is I'm not Venezuela savvy, so that's one of the things, precursor to what I might say. But the bottom line is that I think, isn't that Carlos Slim and Stat Oil and those guys who were the richest people, individual people in the world at one point in the recent past? These guys were controlling everything that came out of that region, generally Venezuela, Argentina, and a lot of Brazil. They do a lot of their trade locally. And so,
well,
got,
a lot of those countries, Don, are operated, they don't operate cohesively with each other. Like, Brazil is a country all on its own. Venezuela is in northern South America, near Colombia,
right,
and not far from Panama. Brazil is huge, and it's on the eastern portion of the continent, and it's one of the largest countries of the world, and they've gone through many trials of capitalism versus communism. But I really think Venezuela is an entity of its own when it comes to political geopolitics. The one thing, though, is they do have proximity to Cuba, Panama, and Nicaragua.
Oh, that's what I
so
want to bring
there is
up.
A lot of proximity because of the waterways. You know, there's a lot of Venezuela has a huge coastline. And they also have cartels, like Ben was mentioning, that are probably aligned with their neighbor, Colombia, which is known for its drug wars.
Well, don't discredit the effect of Brazil, it being the, you know, one of the largest economies in the world. They have a lot in common, even though they do have, I mean, they're almost contiguous with each other, that all of those countries. In general, except when you get down to Uruguay, Paraguay, and Chile, those places, they're a little bit off there on their own. But,
well, Brazil has more of an international presence because it's football,
yeah,
you know, it's football, soccer, and they have the Olympics down there, I believe, and I see them more as a mainstream country.
Yeah, well, I see them more as all integrated in the same kind of culture. And right now that culture is being assuaged by the wealth of the United States, the blatant just flouting of the promise of what we've got. And that's what we didn't understand. But the main thing that that Ben brought up is the fact that Russia, China, Germany, they all have had extreme influences for centuries. Now, it really took hold after the Nazis were in trouble, but it was before then that a lot of people were migrating to South America. But the Chinese are...
Well,
the
Europeans have had a huge influence also in South America. The Germans, practically run Argentina.
That's what I'm saying.
There's tons of Europeans in Argentina.
That's what I'm saying. And we've got to kind of understand what's going on down there. As another Syria of South America, South America, and that's exactly what it is. Because just like Ben said, the I don't know the currency denomination, but it's virtually worthless, and there's a lot of crime going on down there, and they're still one of the richest and minerals.
The problem with Venezuela is they're not cooperative internationally. They're big mouth.
All cultural.
And they don't like the United States.
And it's cultural.
And
but Guaido does.
the new guy. He went to
I see a picture of him, Ben. His name is Juan Gallardo, and he looks fairly young. And he does have a similar face
Gallardo.
To Obama, even though he's Spanish. Well, let me just read one paragraph. Just everybody's going to have to share time tonight. I'm going to stop talking after this paragraph. Mike from Singapore is on the line, but I'm not bringing him in for 5 minutes because I want to get Wade, Albert, and John to say something. In less than a month, Juan Gallardo has risen from an obscure junior lawmaker to a self-proclaimed interim president of Venezuela and the most serious threat to the authoritarian government of Nicolas Maduro. Gallardo, who defied Maduro by taking the oath of office Wednesday, claims to lead... Let me find out when this article... I think it was on January 23rd he took office. He claims to lead a transitional government that will call free elections and return Venezuela to democracy. The 35-year-old was immediately recognized as Venezuela's legitimate leader by the U.S., Canada, and most Latin American nations. And so they've already had the election and he won. I predict he'll be dead in 6 months.
Who?
Okay, John, Wade, or somebody say something. Otherwise, we're going to change the topic. Well, now John had to drop, so he couldn't say anything.
No.
I'm going to let Mike in if Wade or Albert have nothing to say.
I guess it's just more centralized power, right? I mean, let regular people make decisions, decide how to run their business. You know, the more the government restricts the people's choices, the more poverty. It seems like the same thing over and over again.
Wait, there's a lot bigger problems than that. It's not like the U.S. The government pretty much runs the people down there, and like we were saying, their resources are limited by how nice the Western countries want to be because they have oil they can sell, but it's up to other places like China and Russia to make up for their economy where the U.S. doesn't permit. So it's a lot more well, – thank you for contributing to that statement. I'll ask Mike from Singapore what he has to say about it. Mike, what is your opinion on the new president of Venezuela?
Sure. Yes, my dear Jane and Don and all everybody. You know, first of all...
Hey, Mike.
Hi to you, Don, too. You know, the first thing is Venezuela is not United States. So... Is none of our goddamn business to put finger into ass of the every nation in the world. So therefore, I say non-confrontation and let them Venezuelan decide for their own fate. That's the only way. Otherwise, if we do any kind of intervention, it will lead to World War III, even much closer to the home. Right now, Iran. Bombed Israel bombs, Iranian forces in Syria. So we are, everywhere you look, there is so much misery, injustice, and, you know, wars and rumor of wars is in the is happening right now. So it's better Donald Trump, after 35 days, he wasn't able to do any goddamn thing, even $1 more, for the wall, and he opens. Now he says, "Well, I will close it again." No, this is not the way to run the United States of America. And he hasn't got his lesson number one. He will get the lesson number two next time. Go ahead, please.
And what's that got to do with Venezuela?
Well, you guys almost finished the Venezuela. So Jane asked me in Venezuela. So then we went and government shutdown that has no meaning, and it brought 1 million people under close of the homelessness and etc. This president doesn't give a fuck about anybody else.
Okay, so
well,
I don't know. Yeah,
you're not informed about what's going on, it sounds like, Mike.
It's okay if it's true, just admit it.
No, Mike is idealistic. Mike has that ideal world, panacea, utopia, whatever you want to call it.
You guys, I am going to change the subject soon because Wade and Albert don't know anything about it. There are threats against American diplomats also currently going on, and people are already emigrating out of there. National Security Advisor John Bolton said any intimidation would be a grave assault on the rule of law. So the crisis is mounting, as Ben said. And if they don't straighten it out, then there's going to be a violence.
Russia said never be sent missionaries to Venezuela. Russia denies now that they send special missionaries from Russia to Venezuela, 400 of them. He said, no, it's none of our business to, it's none of our business to do anything they want to do. Let them decide. Go ahead, Phyllis.
Okay.
This other article said the old president was sworn in. So half the people don't even know who their presidents are.
Right. Well, I don't agree with every stance that everyone in the U.S. takes on Venezuela. It's like Mike Pompeo just said the other day, basically, you're either with Maduro or you're with freedom. And there's already people who think that Guaido is a CIA plant, but he's already done what a candidate needs to do, which is win the trust of half of the country. And I think it's more than half. I think they're controlling the media to a point that's it's trying to show that Maduro still has control, and he still does have control of quite a bit of the military and all of the judges, and everybody that's close enough to him is afraid to oppose him. But Guaido has promised that any military official that that drops out and supports Guaido, that they will be safe from prosecution. So all these people that are still in power, are they going to jump ship and go with Guaido? And possibly, if that
you
fails,
you keep cutting up, my friend. You make sure. I mean, it's okay right now. But
you guys, part of the crisis is stemming from the fact that Juan Guaido declared himself president, and half the country still thinks that Maduro is still the president. So that alone creates a crisis. The other problem is that they have hyperinflation, power cuts, food shortages, and medicine. More than 3 million Venezuelans have left the country in recent years. So it sounds pretty bad.
Okay, but because we did that, we put an embargo on Venezuela. And so is there good some other country put embargo on us? And then we stop to that here and say, yes, Nancy Pelosi will be the president of USA. So similar situation. No.
No, she won't. She's too old.
No, I know. We are responsible for everything happens in the world. According to the Martin Luther King said, United States is purveyor of violence in the globe. And that's why they killed him. And then they give him a birthday, too. Say, okay, we kill you, now a birthday, so everybody celebrate your birthday to make people happy. But, yeah, Martin Luther King said, because you guys fuck up every other nation in the world, and that's not right. And he died because of that. Go ahead, please.
I'd be interested to know what the exact quote was. And yes, though I have a lot of respect goes out to Martin Luther King, but just because he made some broad generalization doesn't, you know, what he says is not the word of God. He's a great man, but that doesn't make it the word of God. That doesn't make it a fact.
No.
Who are you talking about, Wade?
To the Martin Luther King quote.
Well, that's kind of edgy. Either way, you guys, whether the United States plants embargoes against Venezuela and causes strife among the people, the U.S. does it as a bully tactic to get their way.
Amen.
And have the proper leader in there that they want. But either way,
right,
the Venezuelan people have to cope, and it's the purpose of their president to find other avenues to get the food and medicine they need if the U.S. isn't supplying it. They have to learn to adapt. Because if we are not the savior of the world, and we are the enemy in some places, these countries have to learn how to cope on their own.
Yeah.
But if we let them, if we do let them, yes, they can cope with themselves. But we don't let them. We make decision for themselves. Can Don make decision for you when you comb your hair or when you don't comb your hair? How you
this
feel?
This is that we've
the
already
same.
Discussed the geopolitics of the region, how Nixon and Kissinger overthrew Chile. The Argentinians created their own crisis in 1976. When they killed over 1,000 students during that revolution, and the United States tried to help, but they couldn't. So a lot of these South American countries have high turnover in governments, and we don't have that much control over them.
We attack Granada. We attack Panama. And we got the general... that is in prison right now in USA, and his face looks like a pineapple, by the way. So, I mean, it's not our, it's their business. I mean, you know, and then we bring everything in this country by the coming through the regular immigration and the borders. And now, even $5.7 billion is only good for 215 miles of the wall. Yes. Go
the entire border doesn't need a wall. It's certain strategic areas that are basically drug and human trafficking routes, which the Democrats have already voted for. It's they hate they hate that Donald Trump is the president, that they won't agree with anything, and we're the ones that pay for the stall.
You know,
I do want to mention one more thing, and then we only have about 20 minutes or maybe 15 minutes left of this episode.
But
Maduro was reelected to a second 6-year term in a highly controversial election in May 2018, which most opposition parties boycotted. So that's probably why they had the second January 23rd re-election. And I read some stuff about vote purging. Many opposition candidates have been barred from running while others had been jailed or fled the country for fear of imprisonment. And opposition parties argued that the poll would neither be fair nor free. Maduro's re-election was not recognized by the Venezuelan opposition-controlled National Assembly. Why is it all coming to a head now? After being re-elected for a second term in 2018, Maduro announced he would serve out his remaining first term and then only be sworn in for a second term in January. It was following the swearing-in ceremony that the opposition to his government was given a fresh boost. The National Assembly argues that because the election was not fair, Maduro is a usurper and the presidency is vacant. And that's how Juan Guaido got jimmied his way in through a Venezuelan constitutional rule, Article 233, that says in such cases, the head of the National Assembly takes over as acting president.
Right. Well, it's really hard for
Juan Guaido.
It's hard for Maduro to make any kind of promises to his people when the exchange rate is almost 25,000 to 1 U.S. dollars. So 25,000 Bolivar to $1. Their currency isn't even worth the paper that it's printed on. So there's probably a lot of horse trading going on. People are trading goods for goods, and gas is dirt cheap. But
do you think there's more like a bartering system there?
Well, you would have to. I mean, paper money
is
ridiculously low. So what happens when your currency that you're supposed to be able to use to buy food is worthless? Then you start seeing a spike in drug trade, weapons trade, and sex trade.
Yep.
So that's what happens to any civilization.
Mm-hmm. You have to be a member.
Okay, I'm going to ask the remaining six co-hosts to talk it out while I create the next episode. So Don and Wade and Albert, you have to chime in for the next 10 minutes.
Sure. So tell me what happened. Like, what exactly does the embargoes, what does that involve? What is the U.S. doing when it has an embargo against Venezuela specifically?
Are you asking me?
Or anyone who can answer and knows that.
I think what happens is since we control most of the market, we've turned off basically most of their avenues on being able to sell. So basically, we've cut them off at all the passes, and I don't agree with that either, but I don't know the deeper story. I don't know the meaning. I don't know the reason why. It goes back to the Bush era, but Obama continued it. And
So an embargo is not just like limiting what they can do with us, but not allowing them to trade with other countries then?
Right, I think so, and I think it has to do with our partners.
Okay.
So if our partners deal with somebody we've put a sanction on, then our partners can be punished.
Mm,
so it's like a union.
Okay. All right. I mean, I agree with Mike that we should be not involved. You know, look at Switzerland, man. Like, they just don't get involved, and they're doing great, and they're one of the most free countries in the world.
Okay.
You know, we shouldn't be getting so involved. I think the quote from Martin Luther King's a bit too broad and generalizing.
Why?
But yeah,
because
we should stay out
truth.
Of trouble.
Because we are the first country in the world that we screw every other country for our own survival and create chaos and wars, and we sell to the NBA.
The thing I disagree with is just the
F-30 tank, etc. And that's wrong, my friend. We are the age of the peace and love and unity and caring. This is not right, this is condemned. We cannot sell. We cannot use sell all these things to other nations. How much more arm do we need? One atom bomb is going to end the world. One atom bomb.
What I disagree with is the broad generalization. We have a powerful country. We do too much, but I think it's smarter to deal in specifics and actuality. That you use every you know, we're doing something with Switzerland. I don't like to use every unless I literally mean every, like every single country in the world. It's too broad and generalizing. Let's deal with the actual specifics and facts. And
right. Just like you, Wade, I try to speak as an individual. So when I say our country does something, that doesn't mean that I voted for it or that I'm even in favor of it. That means that somebody higher up the command that my taxes pay for their salary and their pension and their health care, they made the decision to make a bad decision. So when I say our country did something, I like to think of myself as an individual, and I don't like to make broad statements, especially when the United States was in the wrong. So I give it
right
now.
right now Sweden are in the big lines to put the microchips on their right hand, and it's right now the microchips in Sweden say we are finished. We don't have extra. We have to make extra. We'll go back home. We call you guys and come back again. We will give you the microchips you want. And so Sweden,
no,
yes, it's very free country. Yes.
I got a microchip in my phone. That's close enough to me. I got one in my debit card too, but nobody's putting any implant in me.
Yeah. Okay, but Sweden right now they're doing it, my friend. That's as a
I don't care about Sweden. They can have anything they want. That's fine.
That's
I'm
fine.
Sure there's a lot of people in Sweden that don't agree.
Absolutely. And next time I hear all countries in the world, I'm going to go down the list alphabetically, starting with Africa, and you have to explain every single country. Because, you know, otherwise let's not talk about all and none and extremes. Let's talk about specific
real
facts.
ID. Real ID.
What's that?
They have microchips here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Not in us, though.
All I know is that all countries have a problem with the banking system.
Yeah, 4 minutes left. 4 minutes.
Yes.
Can you name all the countries in 4 minutes? I just said all countries.
Oh, sure.
So,
you could test me on it. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe 4 minutes.
Africa.
Argentina. Let's see. Algeria, Angola, Benin, Botswana. But I don't think you want me to.
No,
I could go on. I believe about the banks, though.
Well, that's all a part of it. The Venezuelan, these people are coming in like vultures. They have been coming in like vultures. And they're not right now taking Venezuela for everything it's got. It's Argentina that has some of the, that has the largest gold production, I believe. And so they have a very big sway and big say into what's going on down there in South America, too. But South America, this is cultural, like I said 7 or 8 times.
You know, any country has oil will never, ever see democracy in their country until they have a last drop of oil is gone or sold to USA, and then the USA say, I'm going to sell a 1 barrel of oil for $1,000. You want it or you will die. Go ahead, please.
But anyway, they're having a cultural problem. Like about the 14th time I said. They're still living in a tribalized type of life in the hopes that something will happen and they'll all of a sudden be civilized or in the current civilization. It's not happening. And they're realizing that, and that's why they're coming to our borders, and that's why they will get over the wall some way or another. But right now we don't have a crisis. As we started the show off, the wall, as I said, is fine as long as it's built around Canada. Also, because
that'll be on Trump's next term.
Yeah, that's going to be necessary. It'll be a national crisis. The shutdown is imminent, et cetera, et cetera. But we've got half of the people who are coming in are from other countries coming through Canada or on planes or boats or whatever. There's a big
okay.
And there's also
call back
big,
in 15 minutes, folks.
All right.
Oh, you come back. Okay, I see you 15 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you, Jane.
Remember, Southeast Asians are being deported too at a high historic rate.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. 2 and 1.
Blast off.
Bye bye.
Boom.
Bye bye.
Bye
bye. See you in 15 minutes. God bless you.
All right.